All right, well, we start a new Sefer this week, Sefer Bamidbar. And as we generally do, we'll try to look at the Parsha as a Parsha and also get a little bit of a bigger picture perspective with regard to the Sefer as a whole. Any thoughts that you guys have with regard to Sefer Bamidbar, if you had to encapsulate Sefer Bamidbar?
So it's a lot of stories.
Lots of stories. All the stories we didn't get in Vayikra. My Midbar is full of stories.
The whole Sefer.
Oh. This Parsha, we don't get too many stories.
Right. Yeah.
Okay.
I would deal with Midbar, traveling through the Midbar.
We know when all this is happening. There are no dates. Right, well, that's because we're not doing anything. It's just really halachos.
Just like an hour day.
Just like
1 or 2 days.
It's impossible to know exactly how long.
We took a bit of a break between story, halacha, and
back story. Would it be 2 years? Didn't this Prime Minister start off saying 2 years after they left?
Well, it's the second year, so it's a full year plus a little.
Okay.
Check back, I'll tell you, we once made the following point at the very end of Sefer Shmos. Check back at the end of Pekudei. Check back, you guys have it? The very end of Pekudei in Maftir? So we once made the following point in the name of Mordechai Sabato. Pointed out that in Pasuk Lamed Daled it says Vaychasel Nonis Omo Eiruch Vod Hashem Oleas HaMishkan. The cloud. Which cloud are we talking about? Okay, right. The cloud. Well, not exactly on that cover, but the cloud representing Hashem's presence covered the Mishkan, and Hashem, Kvod Hashem, filled the entire Mishkan. Moshe couldn't even go in. And then a little bit of a awkward transition says, when the cloud would rise, that'd be the sign for us to move. And when the cloud would stay, so then we would also stay. The traveling worked according to the cloud. So Rav Sabato pointed out that Sefer Shmos, the whole second half of Sefer Shmos, deals with the construction of the Mishkan. Finally, at the end of Parshas Pekudei, that process is complete. Kvod Hashem is in the Machane Yisrael. That then has two ramifications. One is that the Mishkan itself is the focal point of Hashem's presence in the Machaneh, to the point that Moshe cannot even enter until he's called in at the beginning of Sefer Vayikra. And Sefer Vayikra picks up that track. It picks up the track of Hashem's presence dwelling in Am Yisrael in terms of Mishkan, all the halachos related to Mishkan, and more broadly, as we discussed in Sefer Vayikra, the various guidelines to having HaKadosh Baruch Hu in your midst and to creating a Kadosh society. Then, the other track, which was the next couple of psukim, we pick up in Sefer Bamidbar, and that is traveling through the desert guided by the Kvod Hashem. I think that's a whole new stage, a whole new transition, which is to go ahead and not just to set up a model community with the Mishkan at its center, but to move forward, to travel forward with that in place. So what is the framework which will allow that to happen? That's Parshas Bamidbar. Sefer Bamidbar is the whole story of trying to make that happen. And we'll discuss how that story progresses. But Parshas Bamidbar is setting the stage for moving. It's one thing to have the Kvod Hashem in our midst at our Sinai, and even after Matan Torah, through the Mishkan, to have the Kvod Hashem in our midst. Sefer Bamidbar is taking that forward and moving away from our Sinai while maintaining that Kvod Hashem in the midst of the Machane Yisrael. So as we almost started to say, what's the framework for allowing that to happen that comes up in our parasha?
The arrangement of the camp.
The arrangement of the camp. Right? The Degalim. The arrangement of how they're to set up camp around the Mishkan, with the Mishkan at its center. Parashat Bamidbar, in which we arrange the camp. Hashem tells us how to arrange the camp with the Degalim and different tribes in different places all around, with the Mishkan in the center. That's the framework that sets the stage for allowing us to move forward with a permanent sense of Kvod Hashem within the Machane. In fact, the Ramban points out that what was the point, if you remember, what was the point of the Mishkan, according to the Ramban? We discussed this way back.
To Sefer Shmos. Har Sinai experience.
Right, to continue the Har Sinai experience in a more permanent fashion. So the Ramban writes, all the way back in Sefer Shmos, that the formation of the camp, of the Machane, which is described here in our parsha, the formation of the camp around the Mishkan really parallels the formation at the time of Matan Torah as well. Right? At the time of Matan Torah, we had something in the middle. What was in the middle?
Har Sinai.
Har Sinai, of course, was in the middle. Hashem's presence descends onto Har Sinai. And can you go onto Har Sinai? Not really. Only very, very select group of people can go onto Har Sinai, namely Moshe Rabbeinu. That's it. And the Zakenim are right around. They, they go a little. They're not all the way up. But they're not back with the rest of the Machane either. They're at the foot of the mountain. And the rest of the people are around the mountain. And how does that parallel the permanent formation of the Machane?
You have the Machane Yisrael.
Okay, you have the Machane Yisrael all around, on all four sides of the Mishkan. You have an inner circle. Who's the inner circle?
The
Leviim, which encamped right around the Mishkan, the Machane Leviyah. And you have the Mishkan itself, the place, the focal point of Kvod Hashem. And not a very select group of people can go into the Mishkan. Or it can go far into the Mishkan. Who can go into the Mishkan proper? So certainly that's the place of the Kohanim. And to the Kodesh HaKadoshim, that's only the Kohen Gadol.
Are the Kohanim part of the tribe?
Yes, they're from Levi.
So the Kohanim would be the Levi also?
Yes. The Kohanim and Levi'im, the Tzadok.
Oh, very good. Okay, Kohanim are Levi'im plus. Part of Shevi Levi.
Genealogy and...
Okay. And we'll get it again. We'll get it again, genealogy this week and next week. Okay. So that is... That's a little bit. There's actually a beautiful vart I'll share with you related to this point that we mentioned about the setup of the Machane being the framework for moving forward away from the little perfect environment of Har Sinai with the Kvod Hashem in our midst. Actually, there are two important varts which relate to this. Okay, I'll share one with you. One of them, this I saw on Salt. I've mentioned it a couple of times. Yes.
You mean to the Machane
and Melach in Torah, right? Okay. So just kidding. Salt. VBM. Surf a little Torah.
Or
David Silverberg. That's what they call it. Salt. Surf a little Torah. That's the name of the thing. No, it's on the VBM. VBM-Torah.org. Check it out. Par Torah for every day of the week on the Parsha. This was a couple of years ago. He quoted Rav Shraga Pollack. I don't know who he is. So his sefer, he writes the following idea. Beautiful. Rashi writes that the Degalim described in our parsha, or at least mentioned in our parsha, were actual flax with insignias. Each tribe had a special insignia that represented their tribe. And Rashi in our parsha quotes that the color of each tribe's banner was the same as the color of its stone on the breastplate of the Kohen Gadol. What's that?
Terumatum.
Well, yeah, the Choshen. Terumatum are in.
Yeah.
Sorry. Okay, in the Choshen Mishvah. So the same color as the stone that represented that tribe. What's the significance of this? It's just cute. It's color coordinated. It works out well. What's the pshat? What's the idea? What do you say? So the idea suggested is as follows. Very simple. Very, very important. He said, the fact that the degolim were the same color as the stone on the Choshen Mishpat was meant to represent that the level, the same level of Kedusha, the level of conduct that we expect in the Mishkan, we expect moving forward into all areas of life. These degolim, that was, according to the degolim, that's how they camped in the Midbar. Not just they camped, that's how they traveled. Not just how they traveled, that's how they went to war in Eretz Yisrael. You know, in a war, all crazy things happen. Pandemonium, everything goes crazy. A lot of times, the moral code upheld at a time of craziness, of war, violence, is drastically lower than one would expect at other times. That's not how it's supposed to be with us. The degel that represents your tribe, which is how you camp every single day in the Midbar for years and years, how you travel, how you even go to war, it's the same color as the color on the breastplate of the Kohen Gadol that he wears when he does avodah. So I thought a beautiful idea, something to consider. Okay, so far so good. Any comments?
The sign that they had on the degels, like the sign of the animals that were associated with these tribes.
Some tribes had animals, and some tribes had other things.
Okay, but
they had it on the back. Shard at some point that went through all of them.
Yeah, if you look in the Art Scroll Chumash, I think it.
Oh, it does.
I think it gives you a list of who was what.
Is somewhere.
I think. You can certainly get it. Some shuls have like the, you know, fancy windows and stuff.
Yeah, but not all of those are the same.
You're saying that the artist just made it up? What's the?
No, some of the artist just has to do with the Bracha of Yaakov, which a lot of it does have to do with.
Okay, some shuls have the actual flags. Some shuls just have artistic stuff related to that tribe.
I don't think I've ever seen one with the actual flag.
I definitely
see that.
Okay.
I mean, it's entirely possible.
All right, Boisai, the Sefer Bamidbar has a nickname in Chazal. You familiar? You know what the nickname is? Anybody? It actually is, interestingly enough, it's reflected in the English name of the Sefer. Anybody know the English name of Sefer Bamidbar?
Numbers.
We call this bar.
So it's called in Chazal Chumash HaPekudim. Pekudim is countings. It's an interesting name for a sefer. I don't know who came up with the English names exactly. I don't know who made that up. What's that?
Three million understands.
Okay. Well, I'll be happy to explain it to you later. Deuteronomy. Dude is five. So it's the fifth book. Levi. Okay. You think about it, you get it. Okay, so why Chumash HaPekudim? I would have said, I asked you to encapsulate the Sefer. Y'all said traveling through the desert. Lots of stories.
Countings.
It's more or less bookended by countings. You have one counting here in Parshas Bamidbar, and where's the other one?
Matos or Maseh.
Not Matos Maseh, exactly. I'll go backwards.
A ton of people died after Korach.
Pinchas.
No.
Pinchas. My name is Parsha. Don't mess. Parshas Pinchas. Now, not only that. Okay, so you have two countings. That you have to name it. You have to name the Chumash after that. It's the type of thing we usually just sort of skip over. You know, you go quickly, daven it up in Shnayim Mikra, hopefully, and that's it. Why you name the Sefer after that? Obviously, if you're calling the Sefer Chumash HaPekudim, it indicates that Chazal saw the countings as something very, very significant with regard to Sefer Bamidbar. That really captures. It gives you a perspective on the Sefer as a whole. Not only that, Rabbi said, Rav Yar Khan from Gush pointed out the following. The Torah goes out of its way to start Sefer Bamidbar with counting. How do I know that? How do I know?
Because supposing it's supposed to be starting right after Shmos, then this is the Shana Hashani.
Okay, so Tzvi gives us the date. Look at the very beginning. Very good. Look at Pasuk Aleph. Pasuk Aleph, Pasuk Aleph. You have it? Jakey, why don't you read it for us, please?
Pasuk
Aleph. Aleph, Aleph.
May it appear on him that the Midbar Sinai, the Ohel Moed, the Halad Kodesh Hashemi, the Shana Hashemi, Seitzam, Merit Yisrael.
Okay, so when does this take place?
The first and the second.
First of the second month,
second
year, and then the next pasuk, Su Esrach Kol Dasman Israel. Count them. Keep your finger on the place, but turn to Perek Tes, pasuk Aleph. Perek Tes, pasuk Aleph. Chil. You have it.
וידבר אדוני משה במדבר סיני בשנה השנית לסיתן מסמסן בחודש הראשון.
So when does this take place?
One month earlier
than Perek Aleph plus Galf. So this is the very clear indication that ein muktam u'meuchar b'Torah. The Torah does not, the very very least, we'll say the Torah does not always follow chronological order. The Mefarshim debate the extent to which we can assume that everything is chronological unless we know otherwise, or maybe not. Maybe it's a little bit looser in terms of the chronological ordering of Chumash. But definitely, it's obvious. It's explicit in the Chumash that Perek Tes came before Perek Aleph. If you look at Perek Zayin also, by the way, Perek Zayin Pasuk Aleph. Says it's Vahi Biyom Kalos Moshe Elokim Esa Mishkan. It was on the day that Moshe completed putting up the Mishkan. The day that he completed putting up the Mishkan. That's Rosh Chodesh Nisan. First day of the first month of the second year. That's also before Perek Aleph. So now the Torah usually does follow chronological order. It's not the pshat. In muktam u'meuchar b'Torah doesn't mean that it's randomly ordered. It's just random. Not random. The Torah generally follows chronological order unless it has a reason not to. If there's a reason not to, so then you better believe that it's out of order because it's trying to tell us something. What is the significance of starting Sefer Bamidbar with the counting, despite the fact that really maybe it could have come in Perek Yud? That would have been the more natural place for it. So the Sefer must be that the counting is very, very significant. As we said, bookends, and the Torah goes out of its way to emphasize the counting. So three ideas I'd like to mention with regard to the Chumash HaPekudim aspect, numbers. Ready? Okay. Idea number one, this is what Rav Kahn suggested. That if you look in the back at the very beginning, Aleph Pasuk Beis, so how does Hashem express this command to count Bnei Israel? Tzvi, read it for us, please. Okay, so he says to count everybody according to their families, according to their fathers' houses, all the names, each individual male. Why does that have to give us somebody? Why can't you just say count them? Su es rosh kol adas b'nei Israel. That would have been good enough. He didn't have to really all say all this stuff. Yeah.
Because when they say count by names, they're kind of making everyone equal. They're not saying this person's greater than this person. Rosh Hashanah, it's
on me too. Okay, very good. Very good. 1 second. Very good. Which Rashi are you referring to? Okay, we'll come back to that. Let me know, but that's a very fair hara. One second, Avi was also right. Yeah.
And you need to go to the father's house, Rosh says, because that we know you count them according to their father's tribe, not their mother's tribe.
Okay, so it's giving instructions how to carry it out.
Yeah, we're not in each tribe, so that's what we can know.
Okay, yeah.
And Jinky's point is that you still have the fact that they're only counting people who go to the army, people who are above 20 years old.
Sure. That's true.
Because since the army can do better than others, in a sense. You're specifying, you're limiting who they're counting.
Perhaps those are the only people that you want to count.
Why? Why should those be the only people you want to count?
If, as I've heard suggested, this is because they are coming into a period where they will probably end up, yes, then this was done also on some degree for a military purpose. And you're counting the people that you are going to be using for that.
What about the older people that are
probably not going to be using them?
Counting
them. I
didn't say you're not
going to
count the old people,
so
you can count them to be above 20.
It says, call your tzeitzava. Yeah, that would be the argument. Okay, that certainly could be. Very, very possible. A point, in terms of Jakey's point, certainly is well taken. And it very well could be that the Torah is emphasizing two things. On the one hand, it's emphasizing the individual, as Jakey said. And it's also emphasizing different groups. The Vesavasam, Mishpachasam. It could have just said, give me one counting. In fact, in Sefer Shmoth, we don't really have a full-fledged counting, but the Torah gives us a overall number. The Torah says there were about 600,000 people. There's no division, tribes, X amount for this tribe, X amount for that tribe. Here, all of a sudden, we are emphasizing the different groupings, and we are emphasizing the individual as a part of something larger. We do, of course, take a census of the entire nation. Yeah. What's that? All right. You want to turn it up to 24 and see if that works? Are people hot? All right. Okay, so the idea simply could be as follows. And again, we're setting up the formation of the machane. As far as we're concerned, in the formation of the machane, every person has a place. Not only does every person have a place, but we recognize the uniqueness and the distinctive character of different groups, of the Shvatim, of the Mishpachot Sam, Levei Sav Sam. They're not all the same. It's not just one big block called Yisrael. There are different groups, and it's supposed to be that way. We can celebrate that in a society that different people take different roles. Some people are naturally have a natural affinity towards this, some people a natural affinity towards that. You know, I don't know, whatever. I'm sure you know. There are people who are very active. They're always the kind of guy that they need to have. In order to feel like they're being productive, they need to have three beepers going at the same time. And, you know, the BlackBerry constantly going, and they're arranging everything. They're arranging that corner, they're arranging this to go there, and this to happen, this to that. You have some people who are much more contemplative, and we need them, and they're... And they play a very, very important role. And there's some people who are the manual labor types, and we need all types. And perhaps, maybe, the counting is meant to emphasize that. Each Shevet is a distinctive unit. Each Shevet had its own degel, its own flair, which reflected its unique character. And it's supposed to be that way. And each individual has his place in the Machane. And maybe coming off, capping off Sefer Vayikra and moving into Sefer Bamidbar. Sefer Vayikra was how to set up a Kaddish society. Sefer Bamidbar is translating that into the here and now and taking it with us. So that's the first thing. First thing to recognize that different people and different groups play different roles in society. That could be one important idea when it comes to Chumash HaPekudim, the countings.
I never thought about this, but in the Shvatim, each Shevet flag, I guess we call it, what crazy symbol, what? Who was it? Yaakov, or I think it's Yaakov, bless each Shevet with. think.
Check it out. You go through a list. Do a comparative. What's that?
Ruvin's was Dudaim.
Right.
So
no, it's not.
No mention of that.
Yeah.
Shimon's was.
So some of it is parallel. Some of it is, but not all.
Shimon's was Shkem, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, which is very interesting. That Shimon is Shkem. Yeah.
It doesn't say anywhere. Like.
The Medrash, described.
Yehuda was a lion. Yehuda was
the lion.
Dan was a snake.
He doesn't say that.
Yisachar is the donkey. Yisachar is the donkey.
I don't remember if Yisachar had a donkey on his flag. Okay.
Is it the Midrash?
I don't remember everything.
The Midrash describes what the flags look like. Check it out in the Arts Ruach Chumash. Compare it to the brachas, and then you'll get your answer as Sviz explained.
No, the ship.
Some yes,
it's
some no.
The ship, all right? The ship. Yeah. The ship. The commerce.
Very good.
The ship.
Okay, Rabbi Yisai, another idea. This is something that I saw written up in a shir by Rabbi Helfgott. So he wrote the following.
By Helfgott?
Helfgott.
God is the tense.
So he wrote the following, and this is really a critically important discussion for 2 weeks from now, Parshas Balosa, which at this point, at which point this shir will not be taking place anymore. But in Parshas Balosa, and Rav Vaitchik also has a very, very famous shir where he really discusses this in great length. Okay, very nice, great parasha. So in Parshas Balosa, there's a very, very critical transition. And perhaps that plays a role in understanding the roles of the counting of the Chumash HaPekudim and really understanding Sefer Bamidbar as a whole and frankly even Jewish history as a whole. What's the plan? Bamidbar, Nasa, and especially Balosa really comes to the fore. What's the plan right now?
To unite everybody.
The plan is to arrange the machane, to get everything ready, and to engage in a triumphant march into Eretz Yisrael. That is what's supposed to happen. That is exactly what's supposed to happen. And Moshe Rabbeinu is the leader. We march in, we destroy the Canaanim, we set up our perfect society, utopia, Beis HaMikdash, Geula Shleima, and that's it. It doesn't happen. Where does it all start to unravel?
Shlach.
Parshas Balosa. Before Shlach. It starts to unravel in Parshas Balosa. And if you look in Parshas Balosa, pay attention. And again, if you can get, there's a write up of it as well, of Rabbi Salvechik Shir in this Parsha, a beautiful Shir. So if you look in Parshas Balosa, we put the finishing touches on the arrangements to go. The Leviim are ready. We've got the Chatzotros to tell us, to help us know when to start and when to stop. Yisro and Moshe have a fascinating discussion. Moshe says, Nosim and Achmi, we're going to Eretz Yisrael. Feel free to come with us. And you can hear the optimism. You can feel the energy. And we start moving, and then you have this fascinating little demarcated parsha of Vayhi ben So Aharon, the sefer that could have, should have, and wasn't. And then tragedy strikes. What happens?
Man,
we start to complain. Mirror. We start to complain about food. We don't have enough meat. We don't have this. We don't have that. And the response is instantaneous. Hashem strikes. People are killed. There's a plague. And it all starts to unravel. We weren't ready. We were still thinking about steak. We weren't ready for the triumphant march into Eretz Yisrael.
And then Miriam speaks
like Miriam. And then you have the Meraglim in Parshas Shlach. But perhaps the Chumash HaPekudim, the two countings at the beginning and at the end, reflect the tragic nature of Sefer Ben Midbar. Especially if we say, as Svi mentioned before, that the counting is meant as a counting of soldiers. So what's supposed to happen? We're counting at the beginning because we're going into Eretz Yisrael. We're about to march triumphantly in. We count again at the end, 38 years later. Because we're about again to march into Eretz Yisrael. It's a different generation. It's a much different tone. A lot's happened. But that's Chumash HaPekudim. Chumash HaPekudim reflects the tragic nature of Sefer Bamidbar, what could have been, what should have been, and as a, on the other hand, what ended up happening, which is that although we had the counting, we arranged the army, everything was ready to go at the beginning of the Sefer, we have to do it all over again at the very end of the 40 years. That could be a possible understanding as well. So far, so good? What's that?
You said the last
day. Rav Soloveitchik really develops this idea in general in Parshas Baal Losa. I saw it in the Shir in our Parsha, meant with regard to the countings by Rabbi Nathaniel Helfgott. Okay. There's another idea with regard to Chumash HaPekudim, which the Netziv discusses at great length in his Chumash HaMikdavar. So he writes about this in the introduction to Sefer Bamidbar, and then sprinkled over the course of his commentary in Sefer Bamidbar, he relates back to this theme and really uses it to explain a lot of the stories that happen in Sefer Bamidbar. Okay, so as far as the Netziv is concerned, the two countings reflect a major change, a major transition in the relationship between HaKadosh Baruch Hu and the Jewish people that takes place over the course of Sefer Bamidbar. And interestingly enough, it is encapsulated in some of the very fine nuances of how the Torah presents the counts. So if you look here, for example, look in our parsha. Look at our parasha in Perek Aleph, Pasuk Lamed Beis. You have it? Elon, read it for us. Okay, nothing so spectacular. Pasuk Lamed Dalet, Avi. Okay, keep your finger on the place. Turn to Parshas Pinchas. Perek Chavav. Pasuk Chavches. Chavav Chavches. You have it?
Yeah.
Jakey, go ahead. Chavav Chavches. Perek Chavav, Pasuk Chavches.
B'nei Yosef, the Menashe.
Next Pasuk, B'nei Menashe, etc., etc. Pasuk Lamed Hei. Hey, Le, B'nei Ephraim. What changed? Well, in both cases we say B'nai Yosef, and then we specify the two tribes. They're flipped. In Parshas Bamidbar, Ephraim comes first, and in Parshas Pinchas, Menashe comes first.
When Yaakov was giving his blessings, he switched hands in Yosef.
Okay, very good.
Who was first Bamidbar?
Ephraim comes first in Parshas Bamidbar. Interestingly enough, we take this a little further. If you look in Perek Beis, when it's discussing the organization of the camp, check out Perek Beis. Pasuk Yudches. Who's the head of the Degel? Degel Machane. It's Perek Beis. Pasuk Yudches. Degel Machane Ephraim. Okay, but interestingly enough, look at Pasuk Chav. What does it say there? Who's with Ephraim? How does it express that? The Olav Matei Menashe. That phraseology is absolutely unique. In all of the other camps, it says the head of the camp of that side, and it just says Dachonim Olav. It says, Umatei just mentions the name. You don't just have V'olav. The Netziv claims, and again, this is supported by the fact that we see that the whole order was switched. that even now in Parshas Bamidbar, in a certain sense, Menashe was above Ephraim, but in a certain other sense, not. What's going on here? Claims the Netziv as follows. Okay, I'll tell you the specific, and then I'll tell you the Yisod. He says Ephraim was superior in the area of Ruchnias. That's the switching of the hands, as you mentioned. Ephraim was superior. However, Menashe was superior in terms of practical running things in Olam Hazeh. You even see that back with Ephraim and Menashe themselves. You know, the Midrashim described Menashe as being the one who was Yosef's helper in running things, and he was translating, and he was running the operations. He's the one who would greet the people when they came, and he'd help them out. And it describes Ephraim as learning with Yaakov. Ephraim was superior in Ruchnius Menashe in Yoni Olam Hazeh. At the beginning of Sefer Bamidbar, we are living a supernatural life. We exist in a supernatural reality. We have this little cocoon, not only a covenant surrounding us. The mud is falling. It's this like completely spiritual thing. And who's the head of the machane? Ephraim is the head of the machane. Yeah, Menashe chips in. Well, Yehuda has their own machane. They have their own side of the camp. I'm talking about within this section. Ephraim is the head. By the end of Sefer Bamidbar, we transition into Derech HaTeva existence. And when we're in the Derech HaTeva existence, who comes first? And in Parashas Pinchas, it counts the tribes, again, according to the Machane. But which tribe comes first now? Menashe comes first. That's the transition that is a major, major theme of Sefer Bamidbar, and it's reflected in the countings, and that's why it's called Chumash HaPekudim. Why did we have this transition?
What's the transition
to
the Derech HaTeva?
What's that?
We still got
mud. You're right, okay. We're transitioning. We're almost done with the mud in the end of Parashas Bamidbar. We're a couple of weeks away from finishing off the mud. No more mud.
We're not done with the mud, though.
We're not, but it's a transition. Transitions happen gradually. We march into Eretz Yisrael. We're out right now at the end of Sefer Bamidbar, about to go into Eretz Yisrael. We go into Eretz Yisrael, and we move completely into Derech HaTeva. After the walls of Yericho come tumbling down, everything is pretty much out Derech HaTeva.
But then we're trying to do the counting after it?
No, but the counting is in preparation for marching in. As Tzvi said before.
What's Derech HaTeva?
Natural. The natural order.
Marching in with Yehoshua from...
With Yehoshua?
Ephraim.
Okay, but fair ha'ara. However, it's Yehoshua and not Moshe.
So,
okay. According to the Tziv, that's exactly why. That's exactly why. Moshe is the L'malam HaTeva. Ephraim is Derech HaTeva. Even when they're working together, think back to Parshas Bishalach, the war against Amalek. Moshe is not going to lead the troops. That's just not Moshe. Moshe stands there with his hands up. Right? And who's the one who's leading the troops? Yehoshua. Yehoshua is the one who's able to be involved to lead in Derech HaTeva. Moshe not. The Netziv, if you look at Pashas Chukas, claims that is the entire story of Memoriva.
What?
Memoriva. I'm not going to get to it right now. We don't have time to discuss it. But why did Moshe not be able... Why was Moshe not able to go into Eretz Yisrael just for hitting the rock? It's because Moshe demonstrated that he was a completely L'malam Menateva guy, and he was not going to be able to be the leader of Derech HaTeva. Check out the Hamak Dover there, or we could discuss it afterwards. We have like 1 or 2 minutes left. Okay? What's that?
I don't like this. It makes more sense if it was totally changed to Derech HaTeva. Then you could say, fine, now it's Derech HaTeva, and Derech HaTeva Menashe would be superior in all of that. So then that's why he would be the one being counted. But
it's
like, I don't even get how it's a transition
there. I'm still explaining to you how it works.
Okay.
In Parshas Bamidbar, we're living L'malam HaTeva, supernatural, and we're prepared to continue that forever. We're going to march into Eretz Yisrael in a supernatural way, and the walls all fall down, everything is great, and we win. At the end of Parshas Bamidbar, we've almost finished the transition, and we're counting in preparation for marching in a natural way. A natural way. This transition begins to take place in Parshas Baalosa, and it moves into Parshas Shlach. In Parshas Baalosa, again, that story when they complain, and immediately they're consumed by heavenly fire, the people realize they cannot, that they can't live up to it. When you're living in a supernatural way, when you're that close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so closeness is closeness. On the one hand, there are privileges. On the one hand, on the other hand, it's a much, it's an overwhelming, it can be an overwhelming responsibility. There is immediate repercussion for stepping out of line in the smallest way. Right? You complain, boom, fifth plague. And they realize that they're not up to it. They're not able to handle it. And that is the story of the Meraglim. Okay, again, I can't get to all the details right now. Check out HaMegdavar in Parshas Shlach. Beginning of Parshas Shlach. The Torah presents the story of the Meraglim as though Hashem commanded them to send Meraglim. And Moshe approves. And then everything falls apart, and it's like their fault for sending the Meraglim. What's pshat? And it's clear that from Sefer Devarim that they're the ones who asked for it to begin with. Says in Itziv, people realize that it's too overwhelming for them. They can't live up to this immediate, close level of Hashkacha. They need a more Derech HaTeva type of existence. And in the Derech HaTeva existence, of course you have to send Meraglim. Of course you have to see what to do, what kind of battle plans to draw, what's your plan of entry, plan of attack. That was a completely, given the reality that they needed to be Derech HaTeva based on where they were at, their level, their spiritual level, it was completely understandable that they sent the Meraglim. What happened afterwards was not acceptable, obviously. The fact that they sent it, that was completely understandable. That represented coming to terms with the fact that they were going to have to move into a natural state of existence. Of course, Avi, in the desert, what do you expect? You have a couple million people. What do they have to eat if they don't have mud? Of course, they don't immediately move into Derech HaTeva. It takes time. And they weren't ready. They weren't ready to enter Eretz Yisrael up to Derech HaTeva. They needed a new generation that was ready to go ahead and to internalize the lessons of Yetzias Mitzrayim and to be able to incorporate that into daily life. But you see already the plan, the transition taking place in Baalos HaShlach. It's reflected in the counting of Parshas Pinchas. And that is perhaps, maybe, something reflected in the countings, and perhaps why the countings really form the bookends of Sefer Bamidbar. Okay, so a few ideas I hope to put our Parsha and Sefer Bamidbar in perspective. And we'll pause here.